This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Suni Lee brought home the gold yesterday in the women's gymnastics all-around final. Permit us a moment of Midwestern pride for this. To quote a tweet from Team USA, Lee stuck it cold like Minnesota with picture-perfect performances on the vault, the uneven bars, and the floor. She is, by the way, the first Hmong American Olympian. No one can take away what this year's athletes have achieved in Tokyo, getting through COVID on top of all the outsized pressures of elite competition. But maybe we've been especially mindful of the women of the U.S. gymnastics team. It's been 5 years since Larry Nassar's arrest blew open the story of what young women and girls had survived during his time as doctor to the team and to many other athletes as well. This is the first Olympics since the toxicity of Nassar and elite gymnastics became wide public knowledge, and that unspooling is due in part to our next guest and her work. Rachel Den Hollander was the first woman to publicly come forward through legal and print media channels about the abuse that she suffered by Larry Nassar. She's now an attorney, an author, and an advocate. Rachel Den Hollander, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have you had an eye on Tokyo this summer?
Oh, you know, the Olympics bring up so many memories for all of us. The love of the sport and all of it, all that it can be and should be, is absolutely there. So there has been a lot of just really eager anticipation to enjoy the incredible athleticism of the world's best athletes. But there's a lot of trauma and hurt that comes with it too, because along with the Olympics comes the anniversary of the IndyStar article coming out. And a lot of those anniversaries for where USAG had some of their most egregious behavior, gaslighting Simone, covering up the abuse, failing to disclose what was going on. And so there's a lot of pain that comes along with it, too.
Yeah. For those who maybe don't follow this quite as closely, Simone Biles, the greatest of all time and star of the U.S. team, of course, was in the headlines this week because of a decision she made. But she was the only, I believe, member of the Olympic team who's still on the team who was a patient of Larry Nassar and who survived him. And just when we think about the mental pressures that were on her, that absolutely has to be part of the conversation. We've heard Simone Biles talk about being this last figure on the team and her worry that without her, the story could get swept under the rug. Do you share that concern, Rachel?
It is always easier for corrupt institutions to sweep things under the rug when voices dissipate. And so I'm deeply, deeply grateful for the way Simone has used her power and her influence and her voice to be able to continue drawing attention. And I think part of just the horrifying reality of how she's been treated is if the world's best athlete and USAG's best gymnast receives this kind of treatment, imagine what's going on with all the lower level gymnasts. Imagine what's going on with athletes that don't have Simone's power and voice. And imagine what would be happening if there weren't hundreds of survivors constantly raising the alarms.
She has not had an easy week, having taken herself out of competition because of where her headspace was. And yet I kept thinking the world that she came up in and the world that you trained in was a place where women and girls had so little autonomy over their own bodies and over their own pain and whether or not they were going to compete. What was it like to see a gymnast at Simone Biles' level take herself out of competition?
You know, I ache so deeply for her because of everything that she's gone through and just the reality that she has poured so much of herself into the competition, and then to not be able to compete is just devastating. At the same time, you're right, watching her be able to have the choice to say no to something that was unsafe and unhealthy for her, watching her have autonomy over her own body, that's the change we've been working for right there. That's what so many athletes, from your low-level club gymnast to your elite athletes, haven't ever had. It was an incredible moment, despite the heartbreak.
What was going through your mind then when you saw people start to call out Biles for dropping out of the games?
Yeah, I get asked all the time, what's changed since Larry Nassar? Yeah. Explain to me how we're in a better place. And I think what we saw this week is that we really haven't changed very much. Our understanding of trauma and mental health and the long-term ramifications of every form of abuse and gaslighting, we don't understand. And we don't really care to a large degree about the damage that those things do. It is a much easier narrative to say, oh, she's just weak, she just can't hack it, than to deal with the reality of what abuse and trauma in any form does to a person. And what's really happening right now that just breaks my heart is there are so many others who are struggling with the mental health ramifications of abuse and trauma who are watching this cultural conversation. And the question and the reality that they're seeing is, if the greatest athlete of all time, who literally won championships with a kidney stone and multiple broken toes and, you know, and has proven herself in every possible way, if she can't even say, I can't do this right now and be given the respect she deserves, who can raise their voice about mental health and trauma and be given any form of respect? If she can't do that, who can? Yeah. And what that does is it just reemphasizes to survivors to sit down and shut up, because we don't care and we're not going to believe you. It's been really painful to see the societal response from some quadrants to Simone and just the lack of understanding and the lack of willingness to understand.
You and your husband, Jacob, who's also a fierce advocate for survivors, were tweeting this week about the difference in the agency that Simone Biles was able to show versus the way that Carrie Strug was handled in 1996. She vaulted through an injury, broke her leg on the landing, and has been invoked time after time this week as some kind of ideal of what gymnasts should do in the interest of winning. How should we compare the handling of what Simone Biles and Carrie Strug went through and the outcomes?
Again, I think it shows our lack of understanding for the culture. You know, Carrie is a phenomenal athlete, and what she has accomplished should never be taken away from. At the same time, the idea that she had a choice in what she did shows just an incredible lack of understanding for the culture of USA Gymnastics. There is no actual way to know what Carrie would have done if she had been given the choice to have agency, if she hadn't been raised in a system that was abusive in every way, shape, and form. And so to compare the two is not an accurate comparison, and it completely bypasses the reality of what Carrie grew up in. You know, I saw Larry just a few years after that vault, and Larry told me himself, Carrie was just being a drama queen. It was just a minor sprain. She was in it for attention. Mm-hmm. So what we have to realize is Carrie was growing up in a system that was emotionally and physically abusive at minimum, and attended to by medical professionals and coaches, where that was their attitude. A third degree ligament tear was just a sprain, and she was being a drama queen for attention. She had no choice. There is no way to know what kind of choice she would have made if she had had a choice. So to compare the two is apples and oranges. It also ignores everything Simone has overcome from an injury perspective. Like, Simone hasn't done those same things herself. Again, it's just incredibly ignorant. She's competed with multiple broken toes and stress fractures. She won the world championships with a kidney stone, for goodness sakes. The lack of knowledge in those comparisons, again, is just astounding. And it's inexcusable, because the reality of what of the system that Carrie grew up in has been long known. It is willful ignorance at this point in time.
Can I ask you a quick technical question?
Absolutely.
When Simone Biles described what she was going through mentally, not knowing where she was in the air when she was in the midst of competing, did you know what she was talking about?
Yeah, every gymnast has that experience at some point in time. Yeah, and sometimes it's just a one-time experience, losing your air sense. But especially for elite gymnasts, that kind of mental block can extend for weeks. And we know, just in general, when it comes to trauma and stress, that can create incredible mental blocks. And to be competing at any level of gymnastics and not be able to sense where your body is incredibly dangerous. But to be competing at that level of gymnastics and to not know where your body is can literally be life and death.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is attorney, author, and advocate Rachel Den Hollander. She's also a former gymnast. Rachel, do you see substantial changes in the generation of coaches who are now working with the U.S. Olympic team? You know, we see figures like Tom Forrester and Sarah Jancy, and we want so badly to believe that things are different now, that no one like the Carolis or John Gettert will be trusted with athletes again. What's your read on the team that you see?
All I think we have to do to look at that is to look at the so many coaches' responses and USAG leaders' responses to Maggie Haney's process with Safe Sport. Maggie Haney is one of the worst abusive coaches. A, it took years to get her banned before Safe Sport would act. And when she was, so many USAG leaders, USAG judges, and other coaches came to her defense, despite the well-documented evidence of incredible emotional and even physical abuse that Maggie was perpetrating. Some of the most abusive coaches over the decades are still coaches at the elite level. So no, USAG has not reckoned in any way, shape, or form with the level of abuse that is taking place in their organization. They have done nothing proactively to address the abuse with these coaches. You know, I find it very interesting that, you know, Jen Say wrote an entire book about her experience where she's laying out significant abuse that she suffered at the hands of her coaches who own the gym Parkettes. And nobody followed up on that. Here you have an entire book that's laying out the abuse of her coaches, and nobody followed up on that. So that the lack of proactivity demonstrates a lack of care. The incredible amount of time it takes demonstrates a lack of care. And the retaliatory responses to the athletes that do file safe sport complaints and the quick rushing to defend coaches who have engaged in just atrocious behavior shows a lack of change.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt, but we could and probably should talk about the administrative picture. Just a couple of weeks ago, we got a lot more public detail about the extent of the corruption within USA Gymnastics with the Investigator General's report about how the FBI mishandled the Nassar investigation. Civil cases are ongoing, and we should note that USA Gymnastics is still fighting to protect its past leaders, Steve Penny and others. Do you see the civil litigation being able to force some real change within USA Gymnastics? Do you think that that is, I mean, it's just unclear whether any further criminal response is going to be forthcoming from the Justice Department.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of hope for our criminal processes, to be honest. You know, we see failures there at every possible level when it comes even to the Nassar investigation, but just across the board when it comes to issues of sexual and physical abuse. So I don't expect to see any more justice, as wrong as that is, coming from our criminal processes. The ability to push change through the civil process is critical and important, but you can only get so much done with an organization that is steadfastly pushing back at every turn. We have been engaged in civil litigation with USAG for almost 5 years now, 3 years with the bankruptcy process. And they are to this day, both USAG and USOPC, asserting that they had no duty to their athletes. These same athletes that were required to participate in this system, they had no duty to those athletes. And gymnastics is a little bit unique compared to some sports because you cannot compete in this sport unless you're a member of USAG. At the lowest level of competition, you have to be a USAG member to even compete in this sport. Your gym has to be a USAG certified gym. Your coach cannot be on the floor unless they're a USAG certified coach. USAG has control of their athletes, their coaches, and their gyms right down to the lowest level. And yet at the same time, they're saying we can control everything you do and you have to be certified through us and you cannot participate in this sport unless you satisfy all of our requirements. Yet we have no duty to you. The cognitive dissonance in those two realities is just astounding. And yet they are asserting to this day, we have no duty to our athletes.
Rachel, do you think the things that have happened in gymnastics over the past decade, do you see them affecting some of the other elite sports?
Yeah, actually, that's been really encouraging to see just from the standpoint of the more elite athletes and even club athletes are raising their voices, the more we're starting to see athletes from other disciplines coming forward and essentially saying, me too. I experienced very similar abusive coaching tactics. Sexual abuse is rampant in my organization. You know, here's what's taking place in all of these other disciplines. And interestingly enough, you also see those same governing bodies and the USOPC making the same arguments. We can control everything you do, but we have absolutely no duty to you. And so again, that level of cognitive dissonance, that lack of care, prioritizing of money and medals over individuals is a consistent thread we see, not just in the dynamics of these different institutions and athletic organizations, but in how they're responding to the whistleblowing.
I think it's getting hard, if indeed it was ever possible, to look at the Olympics and see what athletes put themselves through without feeling a twinge of guilt. Watching all this happen. That was obviously compounded exponentially by the revelation of what you and the other survivors had to tell us. But I'm thinking of Rebeca Andrade of Brazil, who was the silver medalist who very narrowly lost out to Suni Lee, and just the incredible discipline that everybody in the sport shows and the things that they are put through and sometimes put themselves through. After everything, do you think that we'll ever see people competing at the elite level without something like abuse or self-abuse?
Yeah, I think it is possible. Whether we're going to get there is another question. And I think that's going to entail some very hard conversations about what we actually value. And again, you see this coming out with a response to Simone. Yeah, as much as we say, oh, we value the person, we see these athletes as human, the response to Simone from a wide number of quadrants has communicated very clearly, very, very bluntly, we wanted you for a medal. You were a commodity to us. And the level of ownership that we feel over our athletes goes way beyond national pride in their accomplishments. The number of people saying Simone let her country down. What exactly has everybody else done to invest in Simone's athletic career? Did you fund her athletic career? You know, did you get her the medical care? Did you help her go to training? What exactly has the country in general done that we feel like Simone owes us something? You know, Simone is an athlete in her own right. And that idea of you owe us and we own you, that's not national pride. That's commoditization of a person.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a time when you were coaching. Are you coaching these days?
I don't, but I miss it. It was one of my favorite jobs.
Yeah. At the same time, you're a parent. You've got girls at home. What do you tell them about where to set the markers for their ambition, knowing what you know about how the world will support them and not support them?
I think we start with understanding our own identity and our own value. We start with the conversations of you're a multifaceted person. And I love all of these gifts and abilities that you have, and I want to see you cultivate them, but it's not worth sacrificing your ability everywhere else to be able to pursue this. So for example, with my girls, when we're talking about athletics, we talk about the realities of, you know, we need to ask those hard questions. Is it worth a permanent life-altering injury that impacts everything else you can do for the rest of your life? Is that really where your value and identity is? I think we start with those conversations because that lays the groundwork for then being able to make the decision if you want to pursue elite athletics and to understand how to hold those things in balance and to know, like Simone knew this week, that sometimes you might hit a point where, yes, you love the sport and you have poured yourself into it and you want to be the absolute best you can be and you have worked incredibly hard and shown incredible character in your pursuit of athletics, and yet the personal glory is not worth losing everything else that you have. It's not what identifies you. I think we lay that groundwork first because that's the healthy groundwork for being able to pursue high-level athletics and hold those things in balance and know when to say, I am worth more than the medal. And there are things that are more important to me, like my health and my physical safety and being a multifaceted person. And at some point, being able to step back and know your identity is not wrapped up in that. I love the fact that Simone modeled that for my girls.
Rachel Den Hollander, attorney, activist, educator, and author. She's been talking with us about watching the Olympics this year. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.